Well, this is not Alan Rock. This is Denis Rancourt, and it's time for the 5 o'clock train. So welcome to the show. And this week, we're in interview with two members of Canada Court Watch. We have Chad Wells and Chris Carter, who I hope are on the line. I think we can reach them now. Are you guys there?
Hello,
yeah,
Denny.
Here.
Yep. And can you hear my voice, what I just said and everything?
Yeah, I can hear you fine, Denny.
Okay, so the technology is working well and you're on the line. So I just said that you guys are from Canada Court Watch and you are concerned about the so-called justice system in Ontario and in Canada, and you have been involved as members of that group. I mean, you're a very strong activist group for court justice in Ontario. You're one of the strongest court justice activist groups, I would say, in the Western world. And you are mainly concerned with the courts regarding, but not only, but regarding how families are treated, family court, the Children's Aid Society in Ontario, and that sort of thing. Am I right about that?
Correct.
Yep, that's basically correct. It extends into the criminal court as well, but mostly the family courts and the child protection is what we're involved in.
Mm-hmm. So I guess, Chad, do you want to give us, I guess we could start with you. How did you get involved with this group? Why do you think it's necessary? What are the kinds of problems that you see out there?
I became involved back in 2009. My wife at the time and I split up, and unfortunately, the Children's Aid Society basically feeds on families when they're in the midst of a split up like that, and felt they needed to be involved in our family, and did absolutely nothing but harm our children, and constantly went into the schools and harassed our children at the schools and so on and so forth. I found Canada Court Watch online probably about 3 months into my ordeal, and just like a godsend when I came across the website, because everything that I was dealing with was so clear on the website, some of their tactics and things that they use. So without getting into large detail about my case, in the end, by means of using some of the tools on Canada Court Watch, such as recording the workers, catching them, threatening me in line, and so forth, I was able to beat them in the end, which doesn't happen too often. And I now have custody of my three children, and it'll be coming up on a year this March that I have my three children with me. So now I've become involved with Canada Court Watch, helping other families and trying to educate the public as to their rights when dealing with the courts and the CAS.
Because if I understand correctly, the children that are in the middle of this can go one of three directions if the family's splitting up. They can go with the father, the mother, or they can go with the state. They can go with the Children's Aid Society.
That's correct, yeah.
And
what a lot of people don't know about the Children's Aid Society is that in Ontario, they're privately owned and privately operated corporations. I always like to say they're no different than Tim Hortons. The bottom line in the Children's Aid Society is money. It comes down to money. They're a $1.5 billion a year corporation just in Ontario alone. So they need children to stay in business. The more children they get into their care, the more money they make. And, there's no doubt that the Children's Aid Societies, need to be there. There's definitely children out there that are being abused, but they overstep their boundaries more times than they don't.
I've heard horror stories about the Children's Aid Society. A lot of them, a lot of people want to talk on the radio about the horrendous things that have been done to their families and their children and so on. So there's definitely seems to be a problem out there. And the people who want to speak about it are people who feel really hard done by this organization. It makes you. It makes me think that it's not like Dunkin' Donuts or some Dunkin' Donuts or some other donuts. I mean, even if they're loaded with trans fat, they don't do that much harm to a person. Whereas I see a lot, I hear about a lot of harm done to people. You survive Children's Aid Society if you're in that system as a young person, right? You have to survive it.
Yeah, but that's basically it. You know, we're contacted every day. I just got a few emails today from young children that are in the care of Children's Aid Society right now asking for help. You know, I want to be out of here. You know, just what can you do to help me? And it's so hard because, you know, there's not a lot we can really do other than give them the tools and basically let them know their rights and so on and so forth. So it's really tough when some of these kids, you know, are coming to us looking for help and, you know, our hands are sort of tied. They're already in the system. You know, most of these children that are in the care of Children's Aid Societies are on drugs as well. You know, they're on some kind of mind-altering drug.
Prescribed.
Chris and I, pardon me?
Prescribed drugs, you mean?
Correct, yeah. Through the Children's Aid Society. Chris and I were helping a young man up in Muskoka, Ontario, and this child was on 17 different types of drugs at one point in time, all prescribed by his doctor. So, you know, I don't care what the doctor says. There's nothing that justifies being on that many drugs. You know, he was a zombie. He was literally a zombie for years, and that was because he wanted to be with his mom. You know, his mom wanted to be with him. And this is their way of silencing the children, and they just put them in a zombie state, basically.
A chemical prison.
That's exactly it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's the state intervening in families, and they have the extreme cases where, you know, you want the community and maybe even the state to intervene. I don't know. But you use those extreme cases to justify this broad system where they can come and grab your kids. I mean, I've heard them come to the hospital and take babies in the hospital from young mothers and things like that, right?
Yeah. I actually was checking out your website today, Danina, and I noticed that you did a show on Sophie last year.
That's right, yep.
Yeah, and actually Chris and I were up in Ottawa just this year. And we were up there supporting Sophie. There was a protest at the Parliament building, so
yeah.
I'm quite familiar with her case and what they've done to her, how they came and ripped the baby basically out of her arms. And
what I find really disturbing about these cases is that they put you in a system, in a situation where you, the parent, you, the mother, have the onus of the proof to show that you're a good parent, or you lose your child. They put the onus on the parent to prove that they're sufficiently good parents according to them. That's insane in my mind.
It is. It's completely insane. And what we're finding, too, is most of these parents, or if not all these parents, are jumping through hoops to do everything they can for the Children's Aid Society to a T. And in the end, they still lose their children. It's ludicrous what's going on. And, you know, everyone's heard horror stories about people going through the family courts and the CAS, but how big it actually is until you become involved and hook up with some of the people that have been involved in it. It's extremely, extremely big, you know, in Ontario just alone of what's really, really happening behind the scenes. And you know, a lot of people don't want to talk about it. You know, when I first became involved with the Children's Aid Society, I was quite embarrassed. I didn't want to tell anyone about it. And until I really realized what was going on, you know, then I started speaking out, and, you know, I wasn't ashamed at all that what was going on. Like, I had to let people know that these people really are not in the best interest of the child. It comes down to the almighty dollar in the end.
Yeah, and it's hard for people who have not had to deal with the Children's Aid Society to comprehend. It's hard for them to imagine that you're not just exaggerating or it's just you, you're the problem case. But it's just like any interaction with the courts, you imagine that the courts are about justice until you actually have to deal with the courts, right? whether it's fighting a traffic ticket or anything, whenever you have to deal and actually be there and be subjected to the rules under the risk of serious penalties and so on, then you realize that it's an extremely biased and heavy and complex system that where you the individual just cannot find equity and justice. You have to spend a lot of money.
It certainly is. It's terrible what goes on. Like we have, you know, Justice Zucker out of Toronto, Ontario, actually taking the court transcripts and having them altered. You know, things like that are going on behind the scenes that the public doesn't even know about. All this stuff is on our website. A lot of things people don't know is you can go in and actually record your own court case. Under Section 136 of the Courts and Justice Act, you can record your own court case. I've done it. I've actually set a recorder right in front of the judge and recorded the whole court case. And, you know, these are some of the things that we're trying to get out as a group to people to let them know that what can be done. And
yeah, because otherwise the only way you're going to get a precise transcript is to pay a lot of money to get the official copy of the transcript, and then you're only given the transcript, the written transcript. You never have access to check it, or it's not easy to get access to check it with the audio recording. They protect, you know, their so-called court process. It's very difficult to take this system on if you feel that you're not being treated justly as the little person, you know?
Denis, yeah. I'm
now, this is Chris. Chris Carter,
doing?
Yeah. You sorry, I, yeah, please go ahead.
I'm not advocating this in any way, but I know that there is so much injustice occurring, not just in the courthouses, in the courtrooms, but in the courthouses themselves, that some of the citizens of the province of Ontario have felt the need to go so far as to actually violating the Courts of Justice Act, which establishes that you're only allowed to record in a courtroom after you have run it by the judge. Some of the citizens are so afraid going into the courthouse now, the courthouse itself, that they're putting their audio recorders on before they go into the courthouse because they're afraid of the court staff, especially the court security, you know, the acrimony between the Children's Aid Society workers and the citizens who are being litigated against by them these days is a very, very severe issue. And if the government of Ontario doesn't step in and take, you know, concerted and very specific action to diffuse the tension, something's going to happen. We see it in the United States all the time, where parents who have been pushed over the edge take the law into their own hands, and they commit some kind of violent criminal act against the Child Protection Service or against the court staff or a judge or something like that. And the acrimony here in the province of Ontario is very, very severe at this point. And it's almost as if the government wants to start some kind of, well, I think they think that they can forever, in a very severe and intense manner, violate the rights of the families who are dragged into this so-called child protection litigation, which is just an absolute fraud. And it's amazing that there are so many people here in Ontario, the Children's Aid Society workers, the court staff, especially the ones who sit in the...
Oh, we lost you there. Are you guys still there?
I'm not sure what happened to him there.
They see the judges and the Children's Aid Societies collude on a daily basis and have such a horrible effect on these innocent and precious children and families, you know, where is the morality of these people? Children's Aid Society workers who stay in their jobs for, like, you know, even more than a year or two, I have to very seriously question their morality. Because if you're with the Children's Aid Society even for a year, I find it impossible to believe that they have not at that point seen enough of the ugly fraud and criminality, using children as commodities just to shove a few dollars in your pocket, Denny? Who does that?
Let's just clarify a bit. You're not talking about an underground money market. You're talking about careerism. You're talking about people's careers. You're talking about a corporation and that a corporation does what it does in order to keep its managers in high positions and so on. So you're talking about that kind of force, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to ask you both this next question. I get a sense, and I just want to get your sense of this, but I get a sense that, and this is something we don't talk about a lot, and it's hard to talk about this question, but is there a question of class difference here?
Of course. Okay,
so how does that work?
They target, like, socioeconomically, they target families from the working classes and below, the working poor or the poor. They specifically target those families for a number of different reasons, but first and foremost, those families will be obligated to rely on legal aid representation. And I want to impugn the efforts of the lawyers who are representing families.
Hang on now, chat. Chris?
Yeah.
Chris, can you hear me? Listen, Chris, we're losing you periodically. Maybe you're on a cell phone or something. There seems to be a technical problem there. We keep losing you.
How's that? Is that better?
Well, it's better for now, but we'll see.
I took myself off speakerphone.
Okay, well, try to do something because we're losing you too often here.
Okay. And so those legal aid lawyers, that's why they target the families. If they go after middle class or upper middle class families who are able to go out and pay the $20,000. I've heard some of the lawyers in Toronto.
Okay, we're losing you too often.
Painters.
We're losing you. Chris, I don't know. Have you got a landline you can use or something?
I don't, unfortunately, but that's okay. Chad can handle it perfectly. There's no problem there.
Okay, but I mean, I really like what you're saying, but I'm just wondering if you can resolve this loss of signal.
I'll do my best.
Okay, so you were describing the class structure. You were saying that upper middle class families, they can go out and get a good lawyer and spend a lot of money on a lawyer so that the state will have some real opposition in court. But also I think that the judges are upper middle class, and they tend to respond more to upper middle class lawyers, upper middle class families, and so on. Whereas there's a real, I think, a natural negative bias towards self-represented people and people who are of a lower economic status.
Do you think? And that's where Canada Court Watch works to level the playing field.
Yes. And so I want to get into how you guys level the playing field, by what mechanism you can do that. But we're going to first take, so we'll come back, and maybe we'll go with Chad to tell us how Canada Court Watch can help to level that playing field. Thank you both for being with us. Stay with us. Stay on the line. Don't hang up, but I have to take a little bit of a music break and some ads, okay?
Thank you.
Okay, we'll be right back. Okay, we're going to just play some of these ads and just a little bit of music.
The Vagina Monologues are back. For more than 12 years, Eve Ensler's award-winning play has celebrated women's sexuality and strength and played an important role in the V-Day movement. On Friday, February 24th and Saturday, February 25th, the Bronson Center will host upwards of 30 women from the Ottawa community in their production of The Vagina Monologues. All proceeds go towards the Sexual Assault Support Center of Ottawa. Doors open at 7 p.m. and the show starts at 8. Tickets are available online. For more information on the V-Day movement and The Vagina Monologues, monologues in your hometown, check out tvmottawa.webs.com.
Bridgehead is celebrating a decade of serving great coffee and tea to the Ottawa community. Bridgehead supports small-scale farmers by offering 100% fairly traded and organic coffees and teas. Their commitment to social responsibility means grower families receive more money for their coffee and cooperatives receive more money for special projects chosen by the community. Bridgehead wants to thank you for your support over the past decade and looks forward to serving you a tasty coffee, tea, and freshly baked good at one of their 12 Ottawa locations.
Okay, we're back. This is the 5 o'clock train. I'm your host, Denis Doncourt, and this week we're in conversation with Mr. Chad Wells and Chris Carter, who are both members of Canada Court Watch. Welcome back, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Yep. So this is, we were talking about the class analysis of what's going on here. Chad, what would you say is, you know, what tools do you have at your disposal to level that playing field? Because it's so unfair in terms of the class imbalance.
First off, we just try to get people to educate themselves with the law and obviously to utilize Section 136 of the Courts and Justice Act to record. But if you, what I found in my particular case, I spent tens of thousands of dollars on a lawyer, and it got me absolutely nowhere. And when I found out that my lawyer and the CAS lawyer and my ex-wife's lawyer were all playing golf together on the weekends, I knew something was very wrong. So immediately when I fired my lawyer and started learning the law and going in and representing myself, that's when things changed big time. They weren't making, you know, the $3,000 or $4,000 a day off me anymore. It almost seemed like they wanted me to go away. You know, once I started coming in and fighting my case, again, my lawyer wasn't fighting my case for me at all. There were so many things that I'd be like, why didn't you say this? Why didn't you say that? And be like, oh, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. And here all along, I thought he was doing the right thing. And he had some master plan that was going to get my children back. But, you know, in the end, the master plan was to drain my bank account and take my house and leave us with nothing. You know what I mean? And ultimately, I believe that my children would have been made crown wards in the very end. So that's, you know, when I became involved with Canada Court Watch and Mr. Vernon Beck, he's the sort of the smarts behind a lot of the documents on the site. You know, he started training me on how to go in and basically represent myself in court. He did some role play with me behind the scenes, all at absolutely no charge at all. I couldn't believe this man was just, you know, doing this, and here I'm paying $4,000 a day for my lawyer, and this guy's spending, you know, days upon days talking to me, coming down to my house. He lives in Oakville, you know, driving down to Peterborough and spending the afternoon with me, and just out of the good of his heart. So, you know, the way he helped me, I think that's what a lot of the members do now that have been successful in the courts try to do with other families now, is just to try to help them and educate them and basically beat the system, because we all know it's about the money in the end.
Oh, Chad, that's so important what you just told us about there. Your lawyer was, you know, it's again this class divide, right? Your lawyer's playing golf with the lawyers on the other side. And here you are just trying to, you know, save your family. And so as long as you're there and they can go after you, both sides are getting paid. Both sides are stretching it out. Both sides are not being too hard on each other. Meanwhile, you're getting a kind of compromise deal, and the compromise includes breaking up your family. Incredible.
That's exactly it.
Incredible what you just described. Yeah, yeah. And so you found that now when you started defending yourself, how did it feel?
At first, I must admit, I was nervous going in there. You know, I was intimidated by some of these bigwig lawyers. But after I got a couple court cases under my belt, it felt great. You know, I wasn't scared of these guys anymore. And once I started learning the law and citing some of these acts, that's when the judge's head started looking up. And, you know, the lawyers, I could almost see them getting a little bit nervous. You know, the average person isn't supposed to know this stuff, you know. So it felt great. It felt great. And in the end, when I started pulling out, you know, some of my recordings and stuff, I had secretly recorded the Children's Aid Society for months and months and months, and got some really nasty, nasty stuff that I really can't divulge because, you know, I'm going other routes with that in the near future. But when I started pulling some of this stuff out, that's when they basically ran for the hills. They couldn't get me out of the courtroom quick enough and wanted me to go away. You know,
so they resolved it.
It was wonderful, yeah.
They resolved it.
It was wonderful.
Right. Well, that's the thing, is that as a self-represented person, you're going to do things like record the conversations that you're a part of, which a lawyer is not allowed to do. A lawyer would get into a lot of trouble doing that with the Law Society.
Correct. Yep.
But it's perfectly legal to do it. It's just that their professional rules don't allow them to do that sort of thing. They're not supposed to go after each other in that way or play those kinds of games. But a self-represented person can fully use their constitutional rights. You're allowed to record a conversation that you're a part of. And so do it. And when people come after you or when improper activity takes place, you've got a record of it. That's brilliant.
That's right.
Brilliant. So that's how
right.
that was.
But like Chris was saying earlier, they definitely do go after the middle class and the lower class families. The CAS has, you know, an endless amount of money, endless amount of litigation against you. They'll keep coming at you and coming at you and coming at you until you're broke, you know, and then in the end you lose. You know, you've run out of money, and they just file motion upon motion against you, and it's draining. It's draining on you mentally. It's a tough situation to be in, especially when your kids are involved.
Wow.
The audio recording is covered under Section 183.1 of the Criminal Code of Canada. And what Canada Court Watch strongly advises citizens in Ontario is to never, ever let on to the Children's Aid Society that, in fact, you are audio recording. And I mean audio record everything. Your meetings with the CAS in their office. Your telephone conversations with them. Audio record everything. And I can guarantee you, within a short period of time, you will gather a significant amount of incriminating evidence against them. Another thing that we're
saying they're nasty, and they show it, and they're pushy, and if you record your interactions with them, you're going to pick it up because they are naturally like that, is what you're saying, I think.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Chad and I interviewed the union leader, the captain of the Peterborough Children's Aid Society back in, I don't know, I think it was
November.
November last year. And we've got this... this union captain on audio recorder telling us that you got to remember that they were in a very severe, I think they were on strike for about a month or 6 weeks or something like that. And we got the union captain on recorder telling us a couple different times that the management at the Peterborough Children's Aid Society from time to time forces the staff to alter their records. And I mean, that's priceless stuff. When the eventual public inquiries and criminal probes into the Children's AIDS Societies begin, which hopefully will be within the next year or so, after the Ombudsman is given jurisdiction to investigate
So is the Ontario... Wait, you were just cutting off there, but let me get this straight. The Ontario Ombudsman is going to acquire jurisdiction, you think, over the Children's AIDS Society?
I think so, within this calendar year. I think it's going to happen in 2012.
There are clear signs of that?
There's been a number of bills introduced in the past, and they've all been shot down. But there's going to be another one hopefully introduced this year.
Yeah.
And
Ontario's
the only province that doesn't have ombudsman oversight, so it is just a matter of time. And the more and more stuff that's coming out about them, the more articles and findings that they're finding out, it's going to have to happen here.
Yeah. Well, keep pushing for that. We just happen to have a very good Ontario ombudsman at this time, right?
Definitely.
André Marin guy is just amazing. Here's a civil servant who actually does his job at that level. It's incredible. It's rare that the upper middle class takes things responsibly that way. I mean, I could name a lot of other commissioners and people in those positions that really are sleeping on the at the wheel compared to this guy. So I wish that will happen. But, okay. So I was thinking we'd take one little piece of music break. Do you guys hear the music when I play it? Did you hear the ads a while ago? Yeah? Because I've got this thing I found on YouTube. It's called Child Protection Worker. And it's a child protection worker knocking on someone's door, explaining to them how she's going to take their children.
I love that one. Please play that, Dad.
So we'll play that. I played it before. I'm going to play it again. And then we'll have an ad and we'll be right back. Okay? So stay with us, guys.
Thank you.
Okay. Here we go with that.
Hello, I'm a child protective worker. I work for the product acquisition team of the child protective industry. We got a report from an anonymous caller saying that you abused or neglected your child. I have been sent here to investigate. You have the right to cooperate. Resistance is futile. You have no other choice but to let me do my job. You must answer all of my questions and tell me everything I want to hear. If you refuse, I'll go right down to the courthouse and have the judge sign a removal order, which I'll probably do anyway. It's better to be safe than sorry, you know. You will be required to sign forms giving me permission to conduct my investigation, including talking to your doctors, your kids' teachers, and daycare providers, or anyone else who has any information about you or your family. You will also sign a form giving me permission to go to your kids' school and talk to them without any parental interference. I can show up at any time without any prior notice, and I can take your kid away from you without a shred of evidence of any parental wrongdoing. You are completely at my mercy, and I already don't like you. I can take your children away and make it so you can never see them again. What do you think about that? I will not be held accountable for any wrongdoing, no matter how bad I screw up, because I am immune from prosecution, and the judge will simply rubber stamp his signature on any piece of paper I put in front of him, so you really don't stand much of a chance. So where should we begin? Why don't you tell me everything that I want to hear while I go looking around your house for any safety issues that I can think up? I think you're a terrible parent. You beat your kid, don't you? No, you say? Well, I don't believe you. I'm going to take your kid away and throw them into a foster home. Then I'm going to require you to undertake a series of tasks, including drug screenings, psychological evaluations, and parenting classes. These service providers will all help me to build my case against you, and no matter how hard you try, it will never be enough. I'll just simply find something else to use against you and keep adding it on. Well, I guess that's enough for today. See you soon.
Hey, we're back. This is the 5 o'clock train. We're in conversation this week with Chad Wells and Chris Carter, who are both members of Canada Court Watch, a very vibrant activist group to try to give us court justice, especially in relation to families and children and the Children's AIDS Society. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And, you know, this show will be archived with all the others as soon as I can get it up there on the internet at Train Radio. That's one word, trainradio.blogspot.com. And so, but that little clip that I just played from YouTube, that sends a chill down your back, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
It's just incredible, and it seems to be fairly realistic from all the witness accounts that I've heard.
Yeah, there's one part in that clip that really stands out to me, and it's the child protection worker saying, "I will not be held accountable for anything," and it's so true. You know, that they are not held accountable for anything at all.
Another thing that stands out, and I know, Chris, you were telling me earlier that you have some experience with this too, is this idea that they can go and get these service providers like psychiatrists and evaluators and drug testers and force you to be evaluated in various ways. And then these people make large professional salaries finding out and writing reports about what's wrong with you as a person and as a parent. That happens a lot too, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's the wild, wild west of litigation, the child protection litigation. We're talking about the parenting capacity assessments, where the Children's Aid Societies will pay a psychiatrist to sit down with a parent for, you know, maybe as short as a couple hours and come back with a diagnosis. The government of Ontario keeps absolutely no statistics about the parenting capacity assessment process. We don't know how much each of these psychiatrists are making from the CASs. We don't know which diagnoses they are assigning. And because the proceedings occur in the secretive child protection litigation court, nobody can be held accountable. And but we know from anecdotal reports that almost never do the reports come back, you know, with the opinion that the family should be reunited and that the parents, in fact, are healthy, normal citizens. That almost never occurs. But one thing, a child protection worker going down to the courthouse to get a warrant from the judge or the justice of the peace to remove the child. Our experience is that very, very rarely does the Children's Aid Society get a warrant. They only get a warrant in cases where they actually have a strong case. And in fact, child abuse has occurred. In the majority of the cases where they're just fabricating child abuse allegations, they don't get a warrant. So that's one thing that stands out for me from that.
Because getting a warrant is a judicial process, and the judge, you know, has to apply the law and has to actually evaluate the evidence for giving the warrant and so on. So there's a bit of a barrier there, I would imagine.
To a degree.
Yeah.
And again, it happens in secret court.
Yes,
when
yes.
The CAA to get their warrants. Nobody's there, and there are absolutely no records kept. If you go to a courthouse and say, "I'd like some information in regards to how many warrants to apprehend a child were signed by justices of the peace in this courthouse for 2011,
no.
They'll look at you and they
no,
just
okay.
Don't keep the records.
Fair enough, they don't keep records, but if a warrant were assigned, let's say, and they came and took your child, could you, the parent, go and say, "I want to see the documents that were used in granting that warrant"?
That's a thank you, Denny, for bringing that up. That is an excellent approach for getting your children back. One of our Canada Court Watch members in January of this year did some research on the Internet Law Database, Canley. This gentleman's name found, I believe it was 11
Chris,
cases.
We missed you there. We missed his name.
Okay. York, from the Niagara region. He found 11 judges' decisions where parents were able to successfully get the immediate return of their children using Section 51.3 of the Child and Family Services Act. Those 11 judges' decisions can be accessed on our...
Let me just interrupt you for a second, Chris. What was the basis of overturning the decision? What's the legal basis? I mean, did they...
Well, it's case by case, but basically you convince the court that the child can be protected under a CAS supervision order in the home.
Oh, I see.
So
okay.
The families are able to get the child returned from foster care.
Right. Okay, we're losing Chris.
Sorry?
We're losing you.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So it's pretty choppy right now, but I get the picture. But you see, what I was asking is, a lot of these secret, for example, if there's a psychological assessment of you and they determine that you're not a good parent, you're not good enough, they're going to take your children away, can you actually see in detail that psychological assessment, the report?
I had one done on me, and I started to ask questions of the assessor, and the assessor immediately went out and retained the largest medical malpractice law firm in Canada called McCarthy Tetrault, and they basically shut the door in terms of me being able to dig into this assessor's credibility.
Okay, I can understand that, but what I'm asking is, the assessor would have given a written report to the Children's Aid Society, I guess. And can you ask for that written report? Have you been entitled to that written report?
You can ask for the written report. You can ask for the notes that the assessor made during the report.
Yes.
I strongly recommend that parents only do the reports if the process is video and audio recorded. The parents should audio record the process themselves. And they should also get the document, like the guidelines which the assessor was using, because there are various parenting capacity assessment processes,
right? So
which they can use.
Yeah. So there's the so-called terms of reference, I guess, and so the CAS would say, this is the kind of evaluation we want you to make, basically, and you should know that before you go in there.
Yeah. There'll be a specific name to the specific assessment that the assessor is going to use.
Right. So you were able to get all these documents. However, you went...
No.
You went,
no. No, because as soon as I asked for them, this assessor, who he never did one single assessment after the one he did against me.
Okay, but listen, Chris, you it's the CAS that has the report. According to the charter and to the Constitution, you'd be entitled, I think that's your personal information, you'd be entitled to ask the CAS, I want a copy of that report.
Oh, yeah. I got the assessment itself.
Okay, you did get that. Okay. But then you went a step further. You questioned how professionally that decision was achieved. In other words, you questioned how it was done, the professional capability of the person doing it, and so on. You went that step further. Is that what you're saying?
Right. I put in a legal document to the court asking for information in regards to the assessments, the 9 or 10 assessments he had done previous to the one he had done against me, and that's when he went out and retained McCarthy Tetrault.
Right.
And they just put up every single legal barrier possible. And, you know, I'm a construction worker.
Yeah.
I can't motion into court against a law firm like McCarthy Tetrault.
Right.
It's impossible.
Right.
But that's the environment that the government of Ontario has imposed on working class families.
Yeah. So basically, you were trying to protect yourself. You were in court fighting for your family. There was this very negative report written about you. So you questioned the validity of that report. And in doing that, you're allowed to bring witnesses to ask for evidence. So in a sense, you kind of subpoenaed. You wanted to know what was his past work.
Correct.
And
exactly.
Right. And that's when the big lawyers got involved to try and stop you from getting that information to bring it to the court.
Yeah, McCarthy Tetrault, which was also the law firm that represented Oh, what was his name there? Charles Smith?
I don't know that case. But
he put a whole bunch of innocent people into jail, saying that they had murdered infants and children, when in fact they hadn't.
Oh, boy.
There was a big inquiry, the Gog inquiry.
Yeah.
And I think 20 people were released from jail after it.
Yeah. Now, guys, we're wrapping up the hour here, and I'm thinking of a way to sort of conclude our conversation. You know, next month in March, we're going to have Vernon Beck himself, one of the major driving forces of Canada Court Watch. He's going to be for a full hour telling us about this activism and how it works and his work, basically. And we might also have some of you come back for that 1 hour. But in this first initial sort of go-around, we're trying to give our listeners a sense of just how bad it is. And we talked about, you know, the class divide. And I want to ask you this question. I mean, my own sense is that upper middle class people are not better than working class people, not as parents and not as responsible citizens either. I mean, after all, they're the ones that are mostly in charge of society. And look at us. We're in war in Afghanistan. We're doing all these horrible things. We're not questioning our role, doing these horrible things all around the world. People are doing that. Upper middle class people are making those decisions and are covering up those crimes. So one could say a lot about, you know, you got to question yourself, you know, why is there this class divide? And is one class lesser citizens and lesser parents than the other? I'm going to throw that at you. You want to start with that, Chad?
Chris, I'm going to let you handle that one again. Buddy.
I think that you have, you know, good moral people in all classes. I think that, I mean, you know, you take somebody like Mr. Murray, and he is definitely as ethical.
You're breaking up. Who? Oh, okay.
Mr. Murray, the ombudsman. And so I think you get moral people. I think that particularly is a class issue. But one thing, if we are getting at the end of the hour, I just did want to say, Denny,
yep,
that if your listeners want to learn more about the Children's Aid Societies, there are three really wonderful websites. Of course, Canada Court Watch. Canada Court Watch has both a Facebook page and an internet website. And, you know, the internet website has document on how people can educate themselves on the system. And Vern Beck is the author of, I don't, perhaps 100% of the documents on that website. The work that Vern does is absolutely amazing. There is another website called fixcas.com, and that is administered by a gentleman named Mr. Robert McQuaid. He has some wonderfully satirical editorials about the Children's Aid Society. I strongly recommend that people check out that website. And then out of Ottawa, there's John Dunn and his Foster Care Council of Canada website. And that's another excellent website. There are a couple more. Neil Haskett has some websites, and there's a new one called CAS Blog. That looks like an excellent website. So I apologize if I'm missing any, but you know, fixcas.com and the Foster Care Council of Canada. If you want to learn more about the system, check out those websites.
You were once, am I right about this, Chris? You were once sued for slander or libel or something by employees of the CES because of something that had been posted on the fixcas.com website.
Yes, that's correct. That I still get a bit of a chuckle out of that. They sued me and the website for $500,000 in 2009, I wrote three newsletters, which I distributed around the region of Waterloo, and I identified five Children's Aid, Waterloo Regional Children's Aid Society workers, including the executive director, and I made very strong but completely and totally accurate and true statements, such as they were removing children from homes unlawfully, and they were using children and families as commodities. The website posted my newsletters onto the webpage, and then the Children's Aid Society got one of their board of directors, who, surprise, surprise, is also a civil litigator who specializes in defamation lawsuits, and he sued myself and Mr. McQuaid for $500,000. The case was recently...
What was his name? What was the litigator's name?
Oh, I can't remember.
Okay, doesn't matter.
But I know that he was on the Waterloo Regional Children's Aid Society's board of directors.
So they wanted $500,000, but they ended up, it went to court. You're a fighter. You fought it, and there were ups and downs and motions and things. But it ended up you had to pay $1, didn't you?
Mr. McQuaid had to pay $1. I actually completely and totally turned my back on the process. I've been completely and totally financially decimated by the ugliness of what the Waterloo Regional Children's Aid Society has done to my family and I. And so they weren't going to get anything out of me. I found it quite humorous all the way through. But they did get an injunction.
Okay, we just lost you. Hang on. We lost you. They got an injunction against you?
They got an injunction against me, saying that I cannot make slanderous or libelous statements. So, Denny, when I'm telling the public that the Children's Aid Society kidnaps children and drugs them for profit, I must be telling the truth, because I'm not allowed to make any statements which are... So I must be telling the truth.
I actually saw that injunction on the web there with the court stamp on it and everything. So you're right. I mean, here you're disregarding a judge's orders. That's pretty serious. It's a criminal offense. You could end up in jail there.
Again.
Yeah.
Daddy, it's amazing. It's amazing when you stand up to these people and expose anything that they do. It's amazing how much they will come after you. I know Chris has been arrested. I was arrested myself just in May of last year at a peaceful protest for absolutely no reason at all, jailed, not charged, but threatened. Of course, it was all audio recorded, so once they found out there was an audio recording, they ran for the hills again. But these are some of the tactics that they'll use when we're out there speaking out against them. They obviously have the police in their back pocket, and they use that tool quite often to shut us up.
Guys, you know, we're talking about Ontario, and given our discussion of today, my conclusion is this is a class war. This is a class war.
Is.
That's what's going on here. You've got the police, the judges, the lawyers, the corporations, and then you've got the working class people, and they're tearing their families apart and stealing their children as part of what they do.
Well, Denny, they better enjoy it while it lasts, because, you know, God is watching. This lifetime is maybe 100 years if you're lucky. It's just an audition for what comes after. And I'll tell you what, they're not auditioning very well, the Children's Aid Society workers, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, let's work and try and make them responsible in their own lifetimes.
I agree.
Okay, it's been great having you guys on. How do you want to end in the next 2 minutes? We've got a couple of minutes left. How do you want to, Chad? Was there something that you wanted to say that we didn't get to?
No. Again, I just reiterate what Chris says, to go on all the websites, read the information. There's some great articles on there. A great read is Vern Beck's article on the unlawful practice of social work, It talks about how these workers are supposed to be registered with the college. And the funny thing is all the teachers in the province of Ontario have to be registered with the Ontario College of Teachers to teach. All the nurses have to be registered, so on and so forth. You even need to be registered to be a massage therapist nowadays. But to practice social work and to be a CAS worker, they won't be registered because, again, there's that accountability aspect in there. They can be held accountable through the college. So there's a great article on that on the Canada Court Watch website, and I encourage everyone to read that, and it gets into some of the nitty-gritties of how they say that they're not being social
right.
workers. We actually have a recording on the website of them saying that we are social workers, but we don't call ourselves social workers just for that reason.
Right.
So,
but I would argue that, yeah, all this great information is very useful, but it's only really useful if you're going to use it to defend yourself and to fight back. You know what I mean? You've got to be putting it in practice.
It's about people knowing, too. It's about people being knowledgeable of what really goes on. You know what I mean?
You mean to try and get the broader middle class aware of this war? That kind of thing?
Oh, yeah. I agree. If the average person really knew what was going on, like, if I always say, if you want to find out the truth about the Children's Aid Societies, go to the homeless shelters. Go to the psychiatric hospitals, go to the jails, go to the graveyards, and that is where you see the people who have had typical negative Children's Aid Society involvement. Because I mean,
you're including the children in that who were subjected to this, right?
Over 500 children with CAS involvement over the last 5 years dead. And the government of Ontario...
That's just in Ontario alone. Just Ontario.
Just in Ontario.
Yeah.
The government of Ontario puts up roadblock after roadblock, barrier after barrier to the public to examine how or why these children are dying. One of the horrible allegations that we're looking at right now is that the Children's Aid Societies are taking out million-dollar life insurance policies on medically fragile children who they acquire and who they are expecting to die within a period of a month or so or a couple months. They take out life insurance policies on these children in the hope of cashing out on the policy.
Well, one would have to look at the chronology and the statistics and everything, but that's a very interesting allegation.
I mean, I completely and totally believe it's true based on my personal experience with the CAS. And
okay, well, unfortunately, we're going to have to cut it off there. We're not going to be able to check that allegation or qualify it in any way because our time's up. It's been great having you guys on.
Thank you, Denny, for having us.
Yeah, thank you guys. Thank you both very much, and we'll have to do this again sometime.